You are tuned in to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast. Joining us again for our Meet the Candidate series is Devin Barrington Ward, candidate for Atlanta City Council. Our host, Mia Delamar, talks with Devin about public safety, economic equality, and so much more. If you'd like to know who's on your ballot and what they stand for, you can visit gcv.branch.vote for your personalized voter guide to help you build your ballot and make an informed vote. Again, that's gcv.branch.vote. Now, with that being said, enjoy the show.
My name is Devin Barrington Ward. I'm a candidate for Atlanta City Council Post 3 at large, which covers all of the city of Atlanta. So west side, east side, north side, south side, the whole city. We got the whole city on lock. So it's a real pleasure to be able to run for this seat, because I view this as a continuation of my work as a community organizer in the city of Atlanta, fighting for racial justice issues, increasing affordability, police accountability, and reimagining our public safety system, and ending the scourge of poverty in this city. And so over 17 years, I've been doing that work, and it feels like the natural trajectory is to be on the Atlanta City Council, because we need a fighter and someone who loves our city.
So we're going to start with something fun.
Yes.
What are your top three?
I get three.
I know as a foodie, this is hard to just give you one. Top three Atlanta restaurants.
Top three Atlanta restaurants. Okay. Virgil's, Gullah Kitchen, Geechee Kitchen, and West. There's three locations now. West Midtown, College Park, and Conyers. So, love Virgil's.
What is Virgil's?
Virgil's, they're a Gullah Geechee style restaurant.
Okay.
And so, soul food from, you know, Gullah Geechee culture. Mm. Shout out to Juan and G, who are the owners and supporters of this campaign. So, love that restaurant. Love Miss Icy's, because, you know, I'm Caribbean, so I gotta eat some Miss Icy's. And then I'm not technically in the city of Atlanta. Miss Icy's actually isn't in the city of Atlanta either, but on the border, close enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm originally from the east side, so, you know, the best Caribbean food that you're going to get is on the east side.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So International Roti House, yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. If you want good roti, listen, International Roti House, for sure.
I usually go to, there's a Jamaican spot that's like on the way to Stone Mountain.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you drive by and it's this little shopping plaza, like maybe like four businesses are there. We go, I don't know what the name of that business is, but it's Jamaican. It banks.
Cool Runnings, you know, something like that.
But it banks.
Yeah, everybody,
it's always
a
in
little
Metro Atlanta
hack. If you want the best Caribbean food, Jamaican food, Trinidadian food, Haitian food, go east.
It's on the east side.
It's on the east side.
Okay. So what are your top three legislative priorities? I know you kind of touched on it, but what are your top three?
Yeah. So I think, one, public safety is a big issue for me. In the city of Atlanta, we really have a public safety system that doesn't serve the needs of all of our people, and in fact, put some of our people's lives in greater jeopardy. One of the things that I plan on doing on the Atlanta City Council is introducing legislation to establish a mental health crisis response unit within the Atlanta Fire Department, where they would be empowered to serve as the lead agency on mental health crisis calls. And several other cities have done this, like Los Angeles and others, and they get better outcomes for those who are challenged with mental health conditions, because we're approaching this as a public health issue as opposed to a criminalization issue. I also think fully funding PAD services in the city of Atlanta is important. I was really disappointed to find out that PAD has been working without pay since July. At the last city council meeting just this past Monday, we were able to apply pressure to city council, and they provided $550,000 in emergency funding, stopgap funding, so that they could keep their doors open. But I believe fully funding PAD, Policing Alternatives Diversion Initiative, fully funding them is ensuring that they have the money to be able to operate 7 days a week, Monday through Friday. 7 days a week. So that's not Monday through Friday.
Monday
through Sunday.
Absolutely.
But also be able to operate 24 hours. Right now, they're only operating Monday through Friday. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., which leaves a large amount of time where people who are suffering from, you know, extreme poverty, homelessness, mental health issues, and other issues that are more quality of life violations or crimes in the city of Atlanta, where people are able to call 311 instead of 911. It also helps alleviate and take strain off of the 911 system by diverting calls to the 311 system. And so we need to make sure that that system is funded to be 24 hours, 7 days a week. And so that's something that I will prioritize on city council. Moving on from public safety, I think that it's important that we deal with issues of racial injustice and racial inequality in the city of Atlanta. Atlanta is the number one city for racial income inequality in the country. And so one of the things that I'm excited to propose is an Atlanta Baby Bonds initiative. So any styled after Connecticut, any child that is born at or below the poverty line or would qualify for free or reduced lunch in Atlanta public schools would receive a $3,200 account when they are open, a high yield savings account that the city would invest via Invest Atlanta in a way that's done similar to our pension fund. Mm-hmm. And when that child turns 18, they would be able to access as much as $34,000 to $35,000 in funding that they would be able to use to open a business in the city of Atlanta, to purchase a home, or to continue their education in Atlanta or beyond. If they decide to stay vested until 26, similar to how children can stay on their parents' insurance until 26, that money could double to be as much as $64,000 that they would be able to do all of those subsequent things that I just named. That's really important because that is how we address some of these issues around generational poverty in the city of Atlanta. Right. We know that children that are born in poverty in Atlanta more than likely remain adults who are impoverished as well, and that cycle of generational poverty continues. We have to invest directly into our young people because they are the future of the city. The last thing that I believe is a priority is affordable housing in the city of Atlanta. The rent is too damn high.
Killing
it. Say it again. If people ask me what political party I was a part of, I would say I'm a part of the rent is too damn high party.
And so cost of living party.
The cost of living continues to go up. Not only is the rent too high, but also housing in general, particularly for Gen Zs and millennials to be able to purchase property in the city of Atlanta seems like it's something that is out of reach. And so we need to increase the type of housing that is available in the city of Atlanta. I'm a proponent of making sure that we have some of the most progressive zoning laws in the country that allow for the construction of different forms of housing. And when we diversify the housing market in Atlanta, we can bring prices down. So that's making sure that we have those missing middle properties, duplexes, townhomes, tiny homes, basement apartments. Those are things that are currently not really seen in Atlanta's housing market because our zoning laws don't really allow for that. Much of our property is either single family or large apartments. Mm-hmm. And so we need something in the middle so that we're hitting folks at all of those price points. Additionally, it's important that we have about 362 acres of city-owned land in the city of Atlanta. I want to make sure that we're prioritizing that land for affordable housing and housing that is actually affordable. We shouldn't be just handcuffed to AMI, which is way of being able to calculate the cost of living for folks and how we discount housing through affordable housing models. But oftentimes, it's still not affordable. Many people are questioning affordable for who? And so I think that we need to, one, change the definition of what affordable housing is in the city of Atlanta. Because affordable housing is not affordable if it's not near mass transit, if it's not near amenities, if it's not near food and good schools. And so we need to make sure that affordable housing isn't just housing that we put for people who are lower income, but housing that is quality housing, that is housing that is in neighborhoods that are amenity rich and has mass transportation. And so that's something that I'll be fighting for on the city council. The last piece on housing is we can't forget our unsheltered neighbors. And so in the city of Atlanta, we made a mistake when we closed our large homeless shelter and provided no alternative. I have a decentralized shelter model that I would like to bring to the city of Atlanta that would allow for more shelters across all 12 council districts because we don't want it to just be in one person's backyard. We want it to be in all of our backyards because we all have a responsibility for caring for our unsheltered neighbors in the city of Atlanta. And I believe that we can do all of this while still, you know, meeting our goals around preserving our tree canopy, 50% tree canopy goals in the city of Atlanta. We need to continue to be the city within the forest, but we also have to be a city that's affordable for all of its residents.
Absolutely. So on the our homeless population, I think one thing that Houston does Houston, they actually have a force that goes out and will look for. So like when you drive around the city of Houston, you don't see homeless because they have an actual team that goes out and says, hey, man, you need somewhere to stay. We have somewhere for you to be. And they are like, I don't know if they're called peace officers. I can't remember what it was, but it was a super beautiful thing whenever I went to Houston and we had a driver. And so he was telling us all the things. So he's like, you'll notice you don't see any because we actually have people that come out and help them and make sure that they don't have to sleep out on the streets. I was having a conversation with my parents on the way back from Vegas. And I said, well, you know, we just closed down the hospital. What was the hospital?
Atlanta Medical Center.
Atlanta Medical Center is, what, an empty building now?
It is.
Why don't we convert that into a homeless shelter, keep the emergency room as a clinic open for the homeless, we make it some type of shelter, and then we have a full-service shelter, and then we have classes there to rehabilitate people to get them back out into the world. Maybe we have GED classes or whatever they would need. It's a building that's open that nobody's going to use, that's owned by whomever owns the property that could be converted. Exactly.
Yeah, Wellstar. And right now, I was supportive of the mayor's development moratorium that he placed on the property about 2 years ago. Right now, there are different plans that are floating around for redeveloping the space, which would be anchored with some affordable housing, mixed-use development, and some health clinic aspects. I would like to see an increase in the level of affordable housing that is there because that's prime real estate.
Right.
But also having those wraparound services are really important as well. Well, at the same time, we do need another hospital in the city of Atlanta and in Fulton County. We only have one Level 1 Trauma Center with Grady Hospital right now. We had two when Atlanta Medical Center was open. That was a major loss through the closure of that facility. And so I'm looking forward to being on council to work with my colleagues and members of the Fulton County Commission to figure out a site for a new hospital in our city or in the county and to make sure that we do it in a way that you know, takes care of Black communities, because if you go below I-20, you start seeing less and less hospitals and health facilities and health services for people. And we know that south of I-20 is where much of the Black population of this city resides. And so we have to make sure that our residents, all residents, are living in communities that are safe. And you can't live in a safe community if there's not a hospital available to you.
So what are your plans for addressing environmental concerns and then promoting sustainability in the city?
Yeah, so one of the biggest environmental concerns is the new public safety training facility, also known as Cop City. It was you know, confusing to me that we had city leaders talk about our commitment to the environment, but then clear cut 90 acres of forest, impact another 381 acres of forest through waste and flooding and all of the other things that are associated with this project that 116,000 people in the city of Atlanta said that they wanted to be able to vote on. And so my concerns around that is part of the reason why I am not in favor of the project, particularly given the fact that people have not been allowed to vote on it. But it is an environmental justice issue. It's an environmental racism issue. We've already started to see some of the impacts of flooding in the Black neighborhoods that are surrounding the facility. And so I'm looking for ways that we can mitigate the impact of this facility if it is indeed going to move forward, while also looking for ways to repurpose it to serve as a facility that is more grounded in de-escalation and mental health services and training public safety officials on how to preserve life as opposed to taking it, I think is important. And that is an environmental issue as well. But outside of that, I think, you know, we need to have a tree ordinance in the city of Atlanta that protects our 50% canopy goal while also incentivizing developers to do a better job about keeping trees in place. Right now, our tree ordinance is very preferential to developers and not preferential to homeowners. And so homeowners who oftentimes don't have the same resources as large developers are being told that You know, they have to preserve trees in a way that oftentimes is not cost effective, while developers, you know, essentially can pay a small fee and they can rip it up. And so making sure, for example, small things, like making sure we're incentivizing providing additional points to developers who figure out how to use their flood mitigation plans and use trees as a way to prevent flooding. Because did you know that trees are one of the number one ways to stop flooding in the city of Atlanta? And so I think that having a tree ordinance that is associated with preserving and preventing some of these environmental challenges like flooding is really important. Another piece is that we have to make serious infrastructure improvements to our water sewer system. I think in 2022, the system lost about 11 billion gallons of water.
Wow.
That's so wasteful, right?
Very much.
But in addition to that, right now, our water treatment facilities are not doing the best job that they can be doing. We're actually, the city of Atlanta has pending litigation from environmental groups who are suing the city because of recent high levels of E. coli that have been found in the Chattahoochee. There was recently a large fertilizer fire that took place by the South River and caused a major aquatic die-off. Fish, microscopic organisms, you know, and other wildlife that call the South River home are all gone right now. That's ecological damage that has been done to our community and the environment that we live in that may take generations to repair. And so the city of Atlanta needs to do a much better job of protecting the environment, and we need environmentalists on city council, and that's part of the reason why I'm running, because I believe to be a Black person from Atlanta, we're proud of the environment that we have here.
Right.
We have so many amazing nature trails and parks and nature preserves and other things of that nature that you're constantly seeing Black and brown people walking through, walking their dogs, you know, exposing their children to the beauties of nature. And so it's important that our city government and city council reflect, you know, the consensus of the public, which is that we want to see these environmental protections enshrined in law. And we want to make sure that council is holding the administration accountable for the ways that the city has been damaging our environment.
Absolutely. I mean, when even when we have a storm, it's like, oh, my God. I don't want to go down 20 because
Absolutely.
I know
it's going to turn
there's
into
going
a river.
To be a river down 20 and people are almost hydroplaning because, you know, we can't drive. We can't drive. And I'm like, you guys, you know, it's monsooning outside and you know our drainage is sick.
I stay in the house. I stay in the house.
Hydroplated out there because it's just rivers, the Chattahoochee in the road.
Lord have mercy. Yeah.
So that's certainly a super concern. And I think that infrastructure is something that we've just been hammering in for years and years.
Absolutely.
And it's finally showing up in a way that is becoming catastrophic.
We can't ignore it. We didn't have water in the city of Atlanta for 7 days. We're a major city. We're the city with the world's largest and busiest airport. That's unacceptable. And it's not a lack of resources. It's a lack of prioritization. We actually have the money, you know, for the capital improvements that are needed to do to improve our water sewer system and to improve the way that we treat wastewater in the city of Atlanta. We just need to prioritize these things and fast track these projects. And these projects are also great ways to address one of the other issues I talked about earlier, which is poverty.
Right.
When we have these large infrastructure projects, they need to be tied to equity goals. They need to be tied to goals around reducing and ending the scourge of poverty by getting people good paying jobs in the city to work on these major infrastructure projects that, you know, are going to need lots and lots of hands to work on it. So we should be training young people in our school system and at-risk youth on how to do this work so that they can, you know, get hired for these jobs and build a life for themselves.
Absolutely. And we have a bunch of urban farms in Atlanta. There's actually one that's about maybe 8 to 10 minutes from here that some of my students did a tabling for the HBCU Green Fund
awesome.
A week or two ago. So how do you plan to continue to support those farms that are actually in the city of Atlanta while also promoting all the things that we have to do to bring us up to speed in sustainability?
Well, you know, being from the East Side, one of the things that I loved to do was go to the DeKalb Farmers Market as a kid, right? It's one of the most fascinating places in the metro area, just a stone throw away from the city of Atlanta. city limits. And so I would like to see us invest in a large-scale farmers market in the city of Atlanta that is something similar to the DeKalb farmers market, because I believe our region is so big that we can't just rely on the DeKalb farmers market, because I don't know if you've been there recently.
Packed,
okay? It's like, listen.
The fish line is out the door.
The DeKalb farmers market be looking like the club, okay? I mean, the line be around the building, okay? They're going to start checking IDs for you to be able to get up in there. They're going to be like, you reserving a section today? We got bottle service at the DeKalb farmers market. Recently, the city put out an RFP for a city-run grocery store. Mm-hmm. I've been monitoring that process. On council, I would make a slight addendum to that, that it should be a city-owned farmer's market that you can also grocery shop at as well. But I think having a farmer's market really kind of serve as the cornerstone of that grocery experience is really important, because it's going to be pushing the better quality fresh produce that's grown locally in the city of Atlanta. And so I think that a city-owned and operated farmer's market would be a great opportunity to increase the amount of local produce that's available in the city of Atlanta and urban farming. The other thing is, I think having urban farming programs at our parks and recreation centers to teach people how they can grow their own food so they aren't just reliant on what's at the grocery store is important. Lastly, I want to reform our business license process, particularly for grocery stores. I think that grocery stores that we know, and we know where they are, that don't have the best quality food, but when we see that same grocery store on another side of town, the quality is much better. I'm not accepting that anymore. If you can't provide us good quality food, why should we renew your business license? And so I think that that needs to be a part of that, and a part of the ways that we view whether or not people are worthy of that type of renewal. Large grocery stores are worthy of that type of renewal is the amount of produce and the quality of the produce that they're featuring in their stores.
Absolutely. I love that. That's an incredible idea. So let's talk about renewable energy. You know, GCV has a huge 100% by 2050 going on right now, 100% renewable energy, clean renewable energy by 2050. So how do you plan to promote renewable energy in Atlanta?
Yeah, so I think, one, making sure that our buildings are LEED certified is really important. I think the other thing is also by 2050, the city is estimated to have 1.2 million people living inside the city limits of the city of Atlanta. And so we're not going to be able to accommodate all of those people without achieving those renewable energy goals. And so I think also tying our development and the ways that we're approving future projects to renewable energy goals are going to be really important. I also think making sure that we're moving the city fleet to electric or hybrid or a combination of those things will be important as well, and increasing the amount of solar panels that are available, particularly to lower income and middle income families.
Right.
When you see solar panels on homes throughout the city of Atlanta or Metro Atlanta, they tend to be in a certain part of town. They tend to be in certain communities with higher incomes. And so we've got to be able to bring these renewable energy solutions to people who are of lower income and middle income, because they're the ones who are most energy burdened, right? Here in the city of Atlanta, we know that lower income households and middle income households spend a greater portion of their money on, you know, utilities associated with electricity and others that is not necessarily associated with clean renewable energy. And so this is a great way of feeding two birds with one stone.
We're trying to use,
you know, language that's less violent, right? We want the birds to be fed. And so I think this is a great way to be able to reduce people's energy dependence and their costs that's associated with traditional energy sources, while also protecting the environment and hopefully doing the work that we can to prevent the worst impacts of climate change here locally and beyond.
Awesome. So on to more of our social issues. There's been a lot that's been happening in the state of Georgia, especially in this past month. If elected, how do you plan to protect the safety and the future of our children in the city of Atlanta?
Well, I think one of the things that we talked about, part of the ways that we protect the safety of our children is through that Baby Bonds Initiative, uh-huh. right? You know, economic violence is violence, right? And so the ways that we've allowed certain communities and the children in those communities to live under the thumb of poverty is violent. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we need to, as a city, do everything in our power to ensure that we're using public dollars to benefit the public. That right. doesn't mean giving Microsoft an $80 million tax break. That certainly doesn't mean giving Elon Musk a $10 million tax break for a data center in the city of Atlanta. It means investing in our kids. It means that baby bonds program. It means robust summer job programs and entrepreneurship programs to keep young people out of trouble. I think the other thing that you're alluding to is we did see recently a mass shooting at a school in the state of Georgia. And while we've been fortunate to have not have those incidents inside the city of Atlanta in our public schools, mm-hmm. we most certainly have had young people who have brandished weapons on one another and have killed each other. And that's unacceptable as well, because gun violence is gun violence, whether it's a mass shooting or two kids who are trying to sort out a disagreement. I think one of the things in the city of Atlanta that we need to focus on is making sure that every child that's enrolled in a parks and recreation related program must go through a conflict resolution crisis management training, because that's going to be the ways that we teach young people how to de-escalate themselves. Unfortunately, the city of Atlanta is not empowered to have our own gun laws beyond the laws that we have that govern city-owned property. And right. even that can't supersede state law.
Right.
And so it's important that we do all of the things that we can at the city level to keep guns out of young people's hands, but also to give them the tools needed so that when adults are not around, we are confident that they can de-escalate conflict amongst themselves, because the best way to keep young people safe is to empower them with mm-hmm. the tools and the knowledge and the skills to be able to reduce violence in our community.
So how do you plan to increase transparency and accountability within the city council?
You know, I got a question like this that was similar from another organization. You know, they're called Committee for Better Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They represent some of the large corporations and business interests in the city of Atlanta. And they asked me, name a time where your ethics has been challenged and how you work through that. And they asked me that in 2021 when I ran for city council. And they asked me that again. And my answer has not changed. I cannot name a time, because my ethics are above board. I don't believe in taking things that don't belong to you. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in misabusing the people's trust. And I enjoy my freedom. And, you know, elected officials do go to jail. And so
often.
Now, some of them, you know, get 34, you know, felony indictments and they're still able to run for president. But I don't have the complexion for the protection for that. So because of that, for those reasons, and just that, you know, it is a privilege and an honor to serve. I just cannot abuse the trust of the communities that I have organized in for so long. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I'm a supporter of the Office of the Inspector General. There's been some challenges recently in the news and right. between the Office of the Inspector General and the administration trying to walk back the work mm-hmm. that we've done to create that watchdog. And the reason why we created the City Office of the Inspector General was to prevent us being on the news because the FBI is raiding City Hall, because the FBI is taking out evidence boxes and thousands of documents because people are rigging bids, people are using city credit cards to purchase weapons. I mean, our chief financial officer under a former mayor was sentenced to federal prison because he used the city credit card to buy guns. Madness. And so I think that making sure that the Office of the Inspector General, that they continue to be able to be independent, mm-hmm. that they are fully funded, and that their work is not encumbered by the administration or council, myself included, is the standard that people should be holding the elected officials in the city accountable to. And that's one that I plan on being held accountable to.
Absolutely. Above the board.
Yes.
Ethics. We love to see it.
I got the receipt.
Period. So how do you plan to connect with constituents? How will you make yourself accessible and open to them? What's your plan on that?
Well, you know, one of the things that people are so used to seeing elected officials and those seeking to be elected knocking on doors and canvassing their neighborhoods when it's election time. But then when election season is over, they're nowhere to be found. Crickets, ghosts, okay? And I'm not a ghost. And so I will be continuing to canvass while in office, because I believe that we need to make City Hall accessible to the people and meet the people where they are. Mm-hmm. Another way that I plan on doing that is I think it's wrong that our city council meetings are at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday, because that means working class people can't attend city council meetings and provide their perspective on how city government is being run. And so at least one meeting out of the month, I will be working with my colleagues to move one of our meetings to the evening so that people in the city of Atlanta can be able to attend their city council meetings and participate in the democratic process. And then the other thing is I'm excited to invite Georgia Conservation voters to my monthly policy roundtable meetings that I'll be having as a member of city council, because at-large council members in particular are not always as inundated with constituent services issues as our district colleagues. And so it's imperative for me to take this role as a citywide lawmaker to make legislation and make laws, but that needs to be informed by expert organizations that have subject matter expertise in the environment, transportation, public safety, housing, and all of the other issues that are impacting the city of Atlanta. And so the other way that people will be able to stay in touch with our office is through those monthly policy roundtables, where people will be able to bring their ideas to that roundtable, and we can use that to craft legislation, to provide perspective and insight on the legislation that I'll be voting on, to make sure that my vote is reflective of the subject matter experts in this city who represent my constituency as well. The city is too big and too great for one person or even 15 people to make all of the decisions in a vacuum.
Right.
And so making sure that having those monthly policy roundtable meetings where constituents and organizations will be able to provide input and feedback on my legislative agenda is going to be a cornerstone of my office.
Amazing. Well, where can the people find you? Where can they follow you? Where can they get involved?
Well, you can always find me in the streets. You know, I'll be out in the streets, baby. I'll be out in the streets. You can find me online, devinforatlanta.us. You can find me on social, devinforatlanta. Instagram is the account that I personally manage. So if you DM me, I'll respond back. But keep it cute. You can just reach out to me when you see me in the street. If you see me at the grocery store, say hello. Talk to me about an issue that you have a concern with. Reach out. You know, it's important that, you know, the relationship between elected officials and their constituency is a two-way street. And so as much as I have to reach out to my community has to reach out to me as well. And so when you see something, say something. So when you see me in the street, say something. Say hello.
You know me.
You know me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the chair today.
On the chair.